Okay, Kevin, for the grand prize of $1 million, what color is the White House?
I know this.
5 seconds.
Oh, switching to Geico could save you a bunch of money on car insurance?
Okay, judges. That's true, Kevin. They'll allow it. Congratulations. You're a winner.
Woo! Geico, because saving 15% or more on car insurance is always a great answer.
You're listening to the Right Stream Radio Network, rejoicing in the flow of creativity. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Right Stream and hashtag Right Stream. Thanks for listening to the Right Stream Radio Network.
Welcome to the Speculative Fiction Cantina with your host, S. Evan Townsend.
And hello, this is the Speculative Fiction Cantina. It's your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, steampunk, cyberpunk, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. I am your host. I am S. Evan Townsend. I write science fiction and fantasy novels that cause thrills and rapid page turning. To learn more about me and my 10 novels, go to my website, sevintownsend.com. That's my name all squished together as one word, sevintownsend.com, or you can Google me, S. Evan Townsend, and my website should be the first thing that comes up. And while you're there, check out my Treasures of Space series, three sort of space opera books, but they're also kind of hard science fiction. So check those out, Treasures of Space. But the show's not about me, it's about my guests, and today on the Speculative Fiction Cantina, we're pleased to welcome writers Parker J. Cole and K.T. Conti. Now, if you'd like to speak with our guests, ask a question, or make a comment, please call 347-945-7246. That's 347-945-7246. And here's the part everyone forgets. You have to press 1 to be put in the queue for going on the air. If you don't press the 1 on your phone, you won't get to go. I won't get the signal that says you want to go on the air, and you won't get to go on the air. So that's 347-945-7246, and be sure to press that 1 key to be put in the queue for going on the air. Finally, if you'd like more information about my guest, it's on my blog at blog.s7townsend. That's blog.s7townsend.com. Forgot that part. Or if you're on my website, click the Writer's Thoughts link at the top of the page, and that will take you to my blog, because that's the very unoriginal name I gave my blog 5 years ago when I set it up. So anyway, hello, Parker.
Hi, how's it going?
Going great. How are you today?
I am rather peachy. Just so happy to be with you on the show today. So excited.
Yeah, we're very happy to have you here. So Parker, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, to be quite frank, I am a recovering Mountain Dew and marshmallow addict, and I have a fanatical obsession with Star Trek, K-dramas, anime, romance novels, old movies, speculative fiction, the lore, and knitting. And I'm also an author and a speaker and a radio show host myself. So that's me in a nutshell.
Wow. Great. Now, for those who may not know, what is K-drama?
Now, K-drama are people who are into Korean dramas. They are very, very popular among those of us who love Korean movies and shows, and they're called K-dramas. Usually have a romantic element to them, but they're absolutely phenomenal shows with great acting and absolutely phenomenal. So if anyone who's into Korean dramas, they know exactly what I mean.
Yeah, I have a friend who's into K-dramas, and she's always talking about how great they are, and she has her favorites, and I'm just like, okay. And she started learning Korean so she could watch them in the original Korean. I'm like, okay, that's more fanatic than I am about Star Trek.
Right.
I didn't bother learning Klingon, so anyway. KT, hello.
Hey guys, how are you?
I'm great. KT, tell us a little bit about you.
Well, I have to just say, I was actually very excited the moment Parker actually said the K-drama, because I am also a fanatic. We can have an long conversation about K-dramas. I am a J-dramas, K-dramas, we could totally go into that. But let me actually introduce myself really quickly. My name is Casey Conti. I am a black girl nerd, self-proclaimed. I am into all that is science fiction. I am a Whovian. I enjoy all types of anime, K-dramas, J-dramas, anything essentially dealing with Asian culture I am in love with. And I am also an author by night. During the day, I am an attorney. And so I wear several different capes and several different hats, and it becomes very exhausting. So I can definitely say I am very happy for Friday right now.
That's great. And J-dramas are Japanese dramas, if I'm correct,
exactly.
Right?
Yep.
Exactly.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yep, okay. All right. I should call my friend, have her get on the show. You guys could talk about K-dramas.
That would be amazing.
Well, no, we have to talk about your books. Well, we don't have to. We get to talk about your books. So, Parker, tell us about Druid Spear, which you wrote under the name Parker Payne.
Well, let me tell you a little bit about it. I wrote under Parker Payne because it's an honor to my grandmother, because my grandmother was the one who taught me how to read and to write. And so when I started to really branch out into wanting to make a name for myself in spec fiction, I said, I want to give it to my grandmother. So I told Granny, I said, hey, I'm putting myself as your name. And she said, oh, my dear. But she loved it. And so that's where Parker Payne comes from. But then Druid Spear is also like with KT. I have a huge love for Asian stuff. I mean, anime, manga, everything, you know. And so it really fuses my love for the Asian culture with my love for European fantasy and hierarchy and stuff like that. So it's a really infusion of my love for Asian fantasy and European fantasy or European-based fantasy. So anyone who's read the book, they'll see that natural fusion of both two different styles of fantasy within that book. So that's what Druid Spear mechanically is about. But it's actually about a war planet, to be quite frank. So I'll keep it right there for right now. But I really enjoyed doing it. Me and my co-author really enjoyed writing this book.
All right. So it's sort of a fusion of Asian and European fantasy. That's interesting. Because I saw the title Druid Spear, and Druid makes me think of Asia, you know, the tree worshippers. But then you said it was Asian fantasy when I asked what genre it was in my questionnaire. And so I was wondering how you brought those two together. So that's got to be interesting. It's very interesting because the way people get on this show is when you contact me, I put you in the next available slot. So here I've got two women who are into K-drama, J-drama, Asian stuff. It's so coincidence. I did not plan this at all. So that's great. KT, tell us about Awoke.
Awoke, yes. So Awoke is the first in the Want series, which is a trilogy. It is some ideas that I had from anime. If you are a Bleach fan, you might find I've heard that some people have made some correlations to that. So it does take some references and some ideas from that. But, you know, it's totally my own. It features a black female character, which was very important to me to kind of have the representation within the science fiction fantasy genre to kind of start creating more characters that look diverse, that's more reflective of the world that we actually live in. So it's about, you know, a girl who has the ability to see the dead, and she hates it, obviously, because it's the dead. And she has to come to grips as to whether she's really going to embrace the powers that she has and the powers that be that actually have other plans for her. So I won't say any much more than that without giving too much away. But this is actually my very first novel.
Yeah, it's your debut novel. But you're planning a trilogy. When's book two going to come out? Do you have any idea?
So book two actually is in the works right now. I've started working on it, so that should be coming out probably late 2018, early 2019.
Wow. Okay, great. Parker, you also have a novel called The Cure. Can you tell us about that?
Mm-hmm. Well, The Cure is really for my faith-based, like the Christian market. So I write also romances in the Christian market and speculative fiction in the Christian market as well. And so The Cure is my newest quote-unquote release. I say newest because I just released another one, but it's my newest release, and that came out. And that came out in January. So that is more of a sweet romance, very well, I think it's very, you know, soft, warm, cozy romance, you know, because so many of us just want a couple to live happily ever after. You know what I mean? We don't want to go through the divorce and the kids, you know, killing mom and dad. We just want a nice story. And so that's what my other book, The Cure, is about there.
Oh, you know, it's interesting that you say that, too, because, you know, actually I was just talking to a friend of mine, and I think everyone just wants a little bit of romance in the story. I think it becomes so much more than just being, you know, the simple, you're moving about through the plot, but to have something that you can actually really relate to, like, you know, having unrequited love or having that particular crush, you know, you're going after, it adds, I think, a certain element to a story that just makes it more relatable. And I think as a reader, you kind of fall into the story even more. So I definitely agree.
Yeah. Yeah. Just a little.
Yeah. I have a little romance in my novel. So, you know, I'm a put testosterone poisoned male. So, KT, as you said, Awoke is your first novel, is your debut novel. How did it make you? Maybe have to make you feel to actually publish your first novel.
Oh man! Oh God! Relief. Can you hear it in my voice? Yeah, a little bit of relief. You know, it's been 5 years in the making since the first draft was actually really written back in early 2012. And so for it to finally be here at this point where I felt comfortable finally to letting it go and going through the steps of having it produced and everything like that, it's been amazing. And, you know, just from, you know, the greatest fear you have as a writer is whether your piece will actually, you know, resonate with your readers. And the fact that I have gotten some really great reviews from people, again, like the relief is like palpable. You see it on my face. You're like, yeah, oh my God, you know, your book. I'm like, yeah, I know. Isn't it amazing? That's so great. but no, it's been a really interesting journey, but I'm so glad I finally took the plunge and I said, you know what, I'm totally going to go for this. Law is fun, but writing is so much, much, much better.
Yeah, law is fun. I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I'll be the only one ever hear that from.
Yeah. Parker, you also have a short story called God Forsaken. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, God Forsaken was a really fun project. Like I said, I am also in the Christian market, and I do Christian speculative fiction. And so 10 of us got together and said, hey, let's create a distributed anthology. So we basically created all the different characters. So it was like a multiverse. So we created different characters, and my character was the black female version of Samuel Jackson's character in the movie Unbreakable. And her name was Natasha Genesis. And she has that disease. It's complete brittle bone. It's a brittle bone disease. She has that. And she is the warden of a penal colony. The penal colony is on a planet that doesn't have a sun or moon. So it's basically, you know, it drifts in space. And basically a clerical era sends destruction their way. And so these people on the penal colony have no idea that this is coming. And so what I like to think is different. Instead of having spaceships, I actually have it gridded to where black matter is utilized as a grid and people travel on space trains. Okay. And they travel on space trains, which takes years to get there because you're on a train, but they travel on space trains to get to this planet, trying to get to this planet before it gets destroyed. But no one on the planet knows it. And so the warden of the planet, which is Natasha Genesis, she's in love with one of the prisoners who is half, who's Albanian, who is half Doberman Pinscher, half human. And she's in love with him because she sees him as her exact opposite, just like an Unbreakable. You know, she says exact opposite. So she's in love with him. So she tortures the prisoners because she can't ever have a relationship with him, you know. And so she tortures them. And it's a lot of little things happening there. It was my first foray into pulling my love of horror, my love of sci-fi, and romance all together. It was my first time doing that. And so I was a little nervous, but the project went really well. And it's one of 8 books that actually came in, because 10 people joined in, but only 8 people actually published their work. So mine was Godforsaken. And it was very interesting because all the authors put their own spin on the characters. So like my character in one book was underworld mafia person, and my character, she's a vice warden of penal colony, and another character, she's an assassin, you know. So it's really interesting how the different authors took those characters and put them in different worlds. And so that was a really fun project. It's called Godforsaken. It's only like 40, almost 50 pages. It's not a long story at all.
Okay. And that's in an anthology?
It's a distributed anthology. So each author created their own book. You know, each author put their own book in.
Right.
But it's all an anthology. It's called Realms of Our Own. That's the name of the anthology, Realms of Our Own.
Oh, okay. Okay, I get it. All righty. KT, you also started a publishing company, Sugarcane Publishing. Tell us about that experience.
I did. So, you know, one of the things that I'm very passionate about is, you know, increasing the diversity in books today. And I mean, my particular passion really is within science and fiction, but I think it's overall the publishing industry has been quite lacking in addressing the needs of their readers. For instance, you know, I always, you know, I call myself a black girl nerd, but, you know, as, you know, Parker probably can also chime in as well, it's very rare that we see characters on the forefront who look like us. And so, you know, and that's across the board from comic to book to, you know, whatever in the publishing industry, you know, it's not really reflective, I think, of a very growing market share. And we are diehard fans. Like, we will go to bat for these characters. And so I created Sugarcane Publishing because I really wanted to create a space where, you know, diverse authors, illustrators, poets, whomever can have their works, you know, published well and also marketed well, addressing to the actual people who they intended the book for. You know, a lot of times the major publishers really don't have a diverse marketing team. It's very much a one simple, very much cookie cutter type of group, and not necessarily addressing the writer and their particular needs. And so our team is quite a diverse mixed bag of people. And so we're looking for writers of diversity of the LGBTQA community. And anyone really who has a piece who feels that they've never actually had a chance to give their voice a platform, we want to be able to do that. So this has been an interesting really thing where we're in New York City. So we've actually gotten quite a bit of interest in that. And so my team and I were wading through the interest and the submissions that we've had. And hopefully our catalog should be growing quite tremendously over the next year or so. So we're very excited.
Oh, great. Great. Well, congratulations on that. I'm impressed
you.
On. Yeah. Barker, why is faith-based speculative fiction on the rise?
One of the reasons why it's on the rise is because there are a lot of people who love speculative fiction. I mean, so many. I mean, I'm one of them. KT's one of them. But a lot of people see there's a very, very concerted theme that goes with it. So they're often godless, or people who are in speculative fiction, if they believe in God, they're idiots or they're stupid, they're dumb, whatever. And so what happens is that speculative fiction is on the rise because we all love speculative fiction. I love Star Trek. I love Doctor Who. I love, well, I'm not a Star Wars fan. Sorry, I can't get into Star Wars. But I love my spec fiction. I'm sorry.
Honestly,
I can't.
Me too.
You know,
I
can't. I'm sorry. So, but we love it. But then we want to have our faith involved in it as well. And we're not talking like a Jesus story, like, oh, Jesus is going to come and save the day. It's not necessarily that. The groups I am in, we have all kinds of things that we have. So I've had Christian zombie stories, I've had vampire stories, I've had werewolf stories, I've had all kinds of different stories that's in the Christian speculative fiction market. And the thing is, they're not talking about Jesus per se. You know, some people do have that. We have space operas, all kind of stuff that's in speculative fiction that may or may not have a space, I mean, faith theme to it. And so the reason why it's on the rise is because we love speculative fiction, but we want to take away the godlessness of it and put our faith into it. And like KT, you were mentioning about the diversity, and that's also the same thing that's happening with Christian spec fiction, is that they're looking for diverse authors. And so my whole goal has been to have diverse characters in all my work. I don't have to have just one character. And we do need that diversity there. So just because we're talking from two different sides of the pond here, they're actually the same water, if you could say it like that. It's spec fiction. I just come from more of the faith-based side, and KT, you come from more of the other side, but we both have the same desire to see diversity in these genres. And it's on a rise because people, we see it having such an impact on the culture. I mean, who hasn't watched Game of Thrones? Who hasn't watched Well, okay. I haven't watched Game of Thrones. I refuse to watch until everything's done because I've read the books and they were really good. So I'm not going to watch that show until he finishes his last book. I think it's supposed to be coming out, I think, next year. But so that's what we have that passion for. That's why faith-based speculative fiction is on a rise. And I, if you don't mind me saying this, Evan, I talk about it on my shows all the time. I am a huge advocate for Christian spec fiction or for Christians who write spec fiction, and then talking about different things in that. So that's why it's on the rise.
Okay.
Can I jump in? I want to talk to you, Parker, about that point. So I'm also a Christian, and I have very much strong ties to my church. How do you respond when you tell other Christians that you do write science fiction? Because I tend to get, you know, a certain like, oh, really? Like, well, what are you writing about, though? Like, could I really touch this? I feel like sometimes, you know, as speculative writers, there's like a certain taboo to that. How do you combat that?
Well, I have made a decision to myself that, first of all, I refuse to be put in a box. You're not going to put me in a box,
right,
okay?
Right.
Imagination cannot be boxed, okay? Second of all, we need more of these type of stories because so many people are asking what-if questions, you know? They're asking what-if questions. What if, you know, artificial intelligence becomes so intricate and detailed, it can take over the world? What if we're all under, you know, I'm not saying it's going to happen. I really just got to unplug my computer. It won't happen. I think computers are not going to do that. But what if, you know, what if the science that are bringing together different animal parts become actual another race of beings on this planet? What if that happens? These are questions that people are asking that are in church right there, right now. Why aren't we picking up the phone and not phone, but picking up the mesh and talking about this? And so when people ask me, why do I write sci-fi? I say, why not? You know, and I will never let anyone tell me what I can and can't write. I just can't. I'm like, oh my gosh, you don't want me to write this. You don't have to read it. That's how I see it. I'm very simplistic in my approach, but at the same time, I do respect people's opinions. You know, like some people are really, especially in my circles, they're like, well, you're going to have magic in it. Yeah, I am. You know what I'm saying?
That's so infuriating sometimes.
It is. Fantasy, you know, isn't magic. Yeah, and C.S. Lewis was a Christian. J.R. Tolkien was a Christian. You know,
right? Exactly.
You know, they wrote fantasy, and C.S. Lewis wrote science fiction and fantasy. So,
yeah.
So, and you were sitting there saying you refused to be put in the box. And I go, you go, sister. I was like, yeah.
Absolutely.
You will not put me in the box.
Exactly. I was clapping my hands. I said, yes, exactly. Okay.
And I'm a white guy, so, you know.
You can jump in, too. It's cool.
Hey, jump in. You know, no, it's just that, and that's one thing I think that's so important. That's why it's so important, like, for diversity. I mean, it doesn't matter what ethnicity you have or what all that kind of stuff. You have to just be, you know, that's what speculative fiction is. It embraces all. That's why it's so that's why people are into it right now. Like back in the day, they're all into mysteries, you know, how you kill people without getting caught, you know. And now we're all into speculative fiction, you know.
Right.
I'm just saying, a lot of old people are into mysteries because they want to, how can I kill someone without getting caught? You
know? Right.
So,
I'm sorry, totally went off track there.
That's all right. KT, what was your biggest challenge you faced starting Sugarcane Publishing?
You know, it was manpower. You know, it's funny. Whenever I try to explain how I am, how I operate, I literally, you know, I'm between a type A and type B personality. I'm a type A where I know what I want and I'm going to strive and do what I can to do it. At the same time, I realize not everyone is like me, so I try to be a little more flexible in that. So it really came down to the manpower to really address the incoming submissions that we were getting. Fortunately enough, and I was blessed enough to have a group of friends, a group of diverse friends who love books and who wanted to help out, jumped in as moms. So if you guys are listening, I love you guys. You guys are the best team in the world, and I could not do this without you. And so it's essentially just that. It's a manpower and, you know, just continually just reaching out to other authors and any interested parties and getting that started. Another issue that we've had is just resources. You know, we have a massive dream to do, and, you know, so much time and effort can really go into it because a lot of us are doing this as two jobs. I essentially really have two jobs. As I said, you know, earlier, I have many hats. And so throughout the day, I'm taking one hat off and putting on another one. So I'm hoping that at one point we'll have Sugarcane Publishing on the ground so much so that I can completely, you know, divorce myself from the law and solely focus on this.
And if you're a typical lawyer, you're probably putting in 60 hours a week plus, you know. Yeah.
I actually work for a nonprofit, so the hours aren't too crazy. But again, like I said, I wake up at like 8 o'clock in the morning to start my day, and I probably don't go to sleep until about another 14, 15, no, longer than that, 18 hours later, like on the go the entire time. So sleeping is such a privilege.
Yes, it is.
Parker, we talked about faith-based speculative fiction, but why is multicultural speculative fiction needed while not giving up the old classics? But why do we need multicultural speculative fiction?
You know, KT kind of more or less alluded to this when she was responding about the need to see people who look like us in books. But also what's happening, especially in the West, you have more and more interracial couples. You know, I'm an interracial couple. My husband, he's Irish and German. We've been married for 10 years. Our child, I don't know who they're going to say, I am black, I am white. I don't know. Whenever we have one, we'll find out, you know. But more and more people are having mixed ethnicity. So you can't box them in. You can't say, oh, this person is this or this person is that. All that is going away.
Right.
And what multicultural diversity characters do, it gets people to say, oh, I look like this person. I remember the first time, I'm not going to go too off tangent, I saw an African-American girl on the cover of a very, very well-known publisher, which I believe unnamed, and almost fell through the chair. I said, I'm imagining things. I'm totally imagining this. This is not happening. And I did a article about it where I talked about how it shocked me to see an African-American on the cover and why that was such a big deal. And hopefully in 20 years' time, it won't be a big deal. We'll have more photos that have multicultural characters. We'll have more series and TVs that have multicultural characters. They even said by 2050, most of the U.S. is going to be multicultural. I mean, people are marrying outside the ethnic group, you know?
Right.
And what does that tell you about the, you know, right now it's a huge white-black thing. Right? What's going to happen in 20 years when there's not a huge white-black thing? I mean, what are we going to do then? You know? So we need that multicultural presence to help other people know that, hey, I am African-American with a Chinese mom or whatever. It doesn't matter. We're multi-ethnic, and then that helps us stop seeing color as the only thing, because you can't be prejudiced if we all pretty much look the same. You know what I mean? It would be a huge melting pot. Some people even say we'll have like a melting pot, like 50 years, everyone will pretty much look the same, you know, and then we'll have something else. We'll have to find something else to get mad about. So that's why I think it's necessary for that multicultural flavor that we need to have in our industry.
Okay, great. Yeah. KT, Awoke is your debut novel, and you're working on the second one. Have you developed your writing process? Are you a plotter? Are you a panther? Are you a sort of a plotter and sort of a panther? Well, how do you write?
I am a mix, actually. I am a sort of a plotter, sort of a panther. So I have an outline, but it's not a full-fledged outline. You know, I kind of know where I would like the characters to end up. And half of the fun is, you know, kind of going and moving about and writing in different scenarios and seeing how the characters themselves, sometimes the characters really do take a life of their own. And so seeing how a character would react in a particular situation as you lead them to the end point where you know you want them to be. So I think that's half of the fun. But then, you know, the inner editor in you comes out and then you start questioning yourself. But at times you got to just sometimes sit back and just trust the writing, trust your imagination. Your imagination probably can see much further than your mental. No, that doesn't make any sense. Your imagination is mental. But you know what I'm saying? Like, you just allow your imagination to lead you down the rabbit hole, and then it will lead you to the other side into the light. That was a lot of cliches in that sentence, but you know what
I know what you mean. Your imagination is almost subconscious, and it knows more than your conscious mind does about where it wants to take things. Is that
exactly
what you're trying to say? Okay.
Thank
hey,
you.
I got
Friday
one
at 6 p.m. There we go. There it is.
There it is.
That's 6:30 p.m. All right. We'll be back with our guests, Parker J. Cole and KT Conte, in a few moments.
You're listening to the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Right Stream Radio.
What's your story? Right Stream Publishing knows everyone has a valuable story to share with the world. Is it a real life experience, a memoir, or other type of nonfiction? Or maybe a fictional tale that's been living in your imagination? RightStream Publishing can help you bring it to life. With affordable publishing packages that include professional editing, customized cover design, ISBN assignment, Library of Congress control number, and formatting for paperback and ebook, RightStream Publishing offers the best value in indie publishing. As seasoned social media and marketing professionals, we consult with you on a personalized strategy to get your book noticed. And we don't stop there. RightStream Radio Network provides an opportunity for our authors to connect with their readers with on-air interviews broadcasting daily with 7 unique programs. You just can't get all this anywhere else. Visit RightStreamPublishing.com for more information and to set up your no-obligation consultation. Again, that's RightStreamPublishing.com.
And now it's time for your shot of science, the jigger of scientific news. Today's story comes from space.com, and the link to the full story is on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. Just go to the post about today's show, and it's the second thing from the bottom. Anyway, from space.com, United Launch Alliance, or ULA, and Bigelow Aerospace will collaborate to place a space station in orbit around the moon by 2023, which is 8 years away. No, it's less than that. It's brain cramp, 5 years away. The company has announced in a joint statement on October 17th that this was going to happen. The collaboration comes as the U.S. government has grown increasingly interested, in returning to the moon. ULA is a joint venture between the established aerospace companies Boeing and Lockheed Martin. ULA boasts 3 families of rockets, Atlas V, Delta II, and the Delta IV, which have launched a combined total of more than 1,300 missions, according to the company's website. Bigelow Aerospace made headlines in May 2016 when astronauts attached and activated the Bigelow Expandable Active Module, or BEAM, to the International Space Station. The company's expandable habitats are lighter than traditional rigid ones and collapse to fit more living space into a given rocket. The two companies plan to send another Bigelow Expandable Module called B330 into low orbit by late 2022 aboard one of ULA's Vulcan rockets, according to a joint statement. Unlike BEAM, the newer B330 is a standalone station, though according to Bigelow Aerospace, it still has the modular capability of its predecessor with capabilities to dock with the International Space Station, other B330s, and possibly additional spacecraft. The B330 could serve as a way station to future missions to the moon, the statement said. The lunar depot could be deployed easily by 2022 to support the nation's re-energized plans for returning to the moon, Bigelow Aerospace President Robert Bigelow, what a shock, said in that October 17th statement. And that's today's shot of science, an inflatable habitat orbiting the moon.
This is Britt, Toastmaster, health and wellness coach, and crystal consultant with Isagenix. Are you ready to live your best life ever? Then join me for Get Fit, Feel Fabulous every Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network. Each week, I invite an expert guest to share their wisdom on a variety of topics from holistic health, nutrition, weight loss, to becoming a successful entrepreneur and overcoming personal challenges. During every live broadcast, we welcome your calls and your participation in the chat room. Tune in to Get Fit, Feel Fabulous with Britt every Saturday at 10 a.m. Eastern on the Right Stream Radio Network.
This is the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Right Stream Radio.
And we're back with our guests, Parker J. Cole and K.T. Conte. Again, if you'd like to speak with our guests or ask a question, make a comment, call 347-945-7246. That's 347-945-7246. And here's the important part. Press 1 on your phone to be put in the queue for going on the air. If you don't press the 1, I don't get the signal you want to go on the air, and you don't get to. So that's 347-945-7246, and then press that 1 key to go on the air. Parker, do you have something to read for us today?
I certainly do. You know, it was funny trying to find something. You're like, oh, gosh, read the whole book. Okay, so here we go.
I know. All right.
This is an excerpt from The Druid Spear, which is book one of the Ascent of the Gem Bearer series. Ren Uchida's breath came out in short spurts of air. Her heart thudded against her ribcage almost painfully. On automatic mode, her graceful body ran down the passageway in the cave. She had to get to the Elder. He had to know. Long tresses of burnished ginger hair lapped against her back. They reflected the firelight from the sconces lined along the rocky facade of the passageway. Shadows danced on the wall as she made her way. They taunted her with their silent laughter as if to say, "There is nothing you can do." Ren shook her head in denial at the traitor's thought. Another bend to her right sent her to the Elder's quarters. His two trusted aides, Colin and Mikkel, stood outside of it, their thin, wiry frames and dark hair and eyes fixed on her. The Elder's quarters greeted her like the mouth of a large creature. The room was several hundred meters in depth, and long, irregular-shaped stalactites studded the roof. Flowstones gleamed under the brightness of the firelight puriating in the center of the gallery. A clean scent permeated the room. "Come, Uchida-chan," the Elder commanded formally. She had long decided the Elder had eyes in the back of his head. She accepted this and obeyed him. "Sit with me by the fire." He extended his hand. Ren came forward and kneeled before him. She bowed in deference, and he acknowledged it with a nod. Then she scooted until she sat cross-legged beside him. "Uchida-chan, what is it you have to say?" "Senpai, Venus and Mars have taken formation against..." "I know," he interrupted her softly. The event the Jusha of Reichert had all been waiting for with trepidation and bitten nails had arrived. Druid Spear would appear this year. Her breath hissed between the minuscule spaces of her teeth. Wasn't the Elder as disturbed by this as she was? Did he not grasp exactly what happened today? The old man took her hand and caressed the back of it in a gentle, fatherly way. He let go of it. "What else is it you have to tell me?" Legend had it that the Creator had taken the waters from Mars and given it to Earth as punishment for his disobedience. Eon upon eon, he watched with a disdainful eye the royal blue purity of Aethica. When the children of the sun aligned to attack Earth every 200 years, Mars sought its vengeance on her through the very medium that had been stolen from him. Yet old myths and legends would not have sent her to the Elder. "I'm afraid to tell you, Senpai," she whispered in the silence that engulfed him. "Speak clearly, Uchida-chan. Ludovicus has awakened." And that's the end of the excerpt.
Oh, my gosh. I mean, the water was awakened? Oh, wow, this is going to be interesting. And then you quit, and now I've got to read the book. Okay. Which is probably what you were planning. All right. Thank you for sharing that. I really enjoyed it. KT.
Yes.
You have something to read for us today?
I do. Like Parker, I was like, where am I going to read this from? without giving too much, I did find something. So, satisfied, the Scot returned to his explanation. "I'd been tracking someone at the pub when your friend interrupted me." "The man from the pool table?" "Yes, I was curt with her because her alphabet sense of flirting gave the man the opportunity to run. I cornered him in the alley. What you saw in the alley was murder. The man was already dead. I snorted. Right, because dead people hang out in bowling bars and beg to be spared from murder all the time. He smirked. You'd be surprised at what the dead will do to get what they want. Hey, I thought we were going to be honest with each other here. I am. It's up to you whether you believe it or not. I sighed and crossed my legs. Okay, fine. I'll play. Let's say the man in the alley was already dead. Where did he go? The human spirit that doesn't cross over causes an imbalance in this plane, which we call the live realm. To right this imbalance, I sent him over to another plane, which we call the room of apostasy, for judgment. Had he stayed in the live realm any longer, he would have been a liability. When you don't cross over, that energy acts like a beacon for some pretty ugly stuff. Wait, so you sent a dead spirit to this place, this room of apostasy, to be judged? The Scot nodded, studying me again. Yes, spirits like him, and unfortunately there are many more, are the reasons behind the tremors and the unearthly screams you heard. That massive shadow beast from the other plane, and much more dangerous plane, came from him. The screams were the beast. The tremors were the beast walking around the live realm looking for the human spirit to devour and absorb any remaining power they may have. In a sentence, the beast was hungry. His face remained very serious throughout in his eyes as he watched me process his words. So you're saying you sent a dead man to be judged to keep a giant shadow from finding him, and you have this ability because of a Krios. I remember the man in the alley. Please, Krios, do not let me do this. I want you to go. There's so much more I want to do still. I eyed the Scot suspiciously. The man did call you a Krios. What exactly is a Krios? It sounds like a cereal. He smiled eerily and leaned slightly forward. I've been called many things over the years. The Yanku in Celtic, Hades, the Shinigami in Japanese, Angel of the Dark, though angel is a misconception. Far from it, actually. My eyebrows rose. What are you saying? You're the Grim Reaper? Death? Yes. All of the above. And that's the end.
Wow.
Yeah. I agree. Wow. Oh, my gosh. I gotta say, both of you are very talented writers. I have chills. I have goosebumps.
Oh, goody!
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, might be just the heat just turned on, or might no. Parker, why exactly did you start writing, and when?
I can honestly say that I am one of the few people, I believe, that always knew I would be a writer. I do not have a memory of not having the written word within me. If it wasn't a book, I was writing stories, I was writing poems. There is, when I literally say there is no memory of me not writing, Maybe when I was in my mother's womb, okay, yeah, I couldn't write then. But, you know, there is no memory of that. And I always knew it would be writing. And I say I'm very fortunate because some people are still trying to figure out what they're supposed to do. And I actually think this was something that was given to me, and I always knew this would be what I would do. But I did not take myself seriously. I've always written, but I didn't take myself seriously until 2010 when I lost my job. I lost my job, and I remember I came home, and I looked at my first book, and I had been writing it for 10 years. And I said, you know what? I'm tired of writing you. I want you to be done. I want you to be done, you know? And it took 10 years to write my first book. And in 2011, I published it. And I can honestly say things changed from there. So that's why I say I've always wanted to write, but I didn't take myself seriously until 2010.
Wow. I'm sort of, you know, people ask me how long I've been writing. I say since I was 12, you know, when I taught myself how to type. I was always making up stories, build these worlds with my Legos and then make up stories about them. And then I didn't start writing them down until I was 12. KT, same question though. Why did you start writing and when? KT, did we lose you?
Nope. Sorry. Didn't realize I was on mute. Sorry for that. I would have to say I actually really started writing probably in high school. You know, it kind of started off as, you know, poetry as being like an angsty teenager, and then became short stories. I wrote my first play in my senior year of high school. But I always had it in my head that I was going to go to law school. I come from a Haitian background, and so Haitians really only know really three professions: as a doctor, a lawyer, engineer. And so I was going the lawyer track. And when I got to college, I kind of put it away. It was almost like when, you know, you put the foolish things of your childhood away in order for you to move beyond. But actually, it was during the time that I was studying for the bar that I realized how much writing was an outlet for me. And I was so stressed out and so overwhelmed with writing that I just started going into my own. I think at that point you really can call it fan fiction. And it kind of reblossomed my love for writing. And so shortly after, I then began to write the first draft of Awoke. And I've been, you know, writing little things here and there, kind of keeping it up. But it was just so much of a release for me that, you know, just like Parker, I'm like, you know what, this has to get out. I think I've always known I wanted this. I've always wanted to be a writer. And now I feel like I can do it. I don't have to pretend as if, you know, I have to be this particular lawyer. I can actually do what I love, and writing is what I love. Books are what I love. So.
Great, great. I love both those stories that you guys told. Those were, yeah. You know, like I said, I was sort of the same way. I always wrote, just didn't write it down.
Yeah.
Parker, what? We just started talking. We've been talking about how much we love. What is it you love about writing?
I like the connection that you build with a reader as you write. And my answer, I've been asked this question before, but my answer has changed over years. First, it's just the love of writing, you know, going into your own world, being one with people, you know, creating your own everything. But over time, I am really relationship focused. I love relationships. I love relationships with people, and that this is just another avenue to create a relationship with someone, especially with indie authors. Because I remember books when you had to pay for them. You know, I remember when you had to pay for books. No one offered a book for free. I know that was a long time ago, in the year 1990 something, but you had to pay for your books. There was never an idea of getting anything for free, but we all know that's a tactic now to get more readership. But authors were so far away from you. You know, they were so far away from you. Like, if I wanted to talk to Stephen King, who I absolutely adored, I could never talk to him. He would never see me, you know. But now with the indie author and building that tribe, people can connect with you now. You can get an email from someone. You can get a message, a PM, and that connection is built through that relationship with the written word, because stories are the universal language. People love stories. We love to tell stories. That's how we connect with each other, you know? And so that's one of the reasons why I enjoy writing. I love connecting with people from all over the world. I've had people from all over the world connect with my books. And we talk, and I try to build a relationship, if I can, with that reader. And that's what I really like about it, building the bridges from one person to another.
Great. KT, I'm going to ask you the same thing. What do you love about writing?
The escapism that you can experience. You know, you could have the worst day ever, but losing yourself in a story is one of the most liberating things, you know. From, you know, I've always said I've taken so many vacations just by reading a book. You know, I can, you know, travel processes. I can, you know, go to planets I've never even heard of, and I can just experience it from my book. And I've been reading for so long. You know, my mom is a school teacher, and one of the things that she impressed on myself and my younger brother from a very early age is books are your best friend, and you should embrace them, and you should keep them by your side at all times. And so at two, I knew I was always going to be a book lover. I've always called myself a nerd. I never shied away from that. And so, you know, it's that shared experience that you can have with someone just with the book. You know, the same book I read is the same, you know, the same experience you'll have reading it. I mean, we might have maybe different views or maybe different tastes on how we like it, but it's still the same experience because we still read the same book. And I think that is a bridge that brings people together, knowing that you read the same book, shared by a wonderful storyteller, and you're able to share that experience.
Great. Oh, all right. You guys got. I gotta get you guys off the air because you're blowing me away.
No. Guys, oh, Evan.
Everything the two of you say, I just go, wow, these are such amazing things that you're saying. Parker, why should anybody buy your books?
I think they're going to love a good story. That's why they should buy my books. They're going to love a good story. I think they're going to like the fact that I write, just because I'm in the, people tend to pigeonhole Christian fiction and Christian stories as, oh, it's a Jesus story. And they just, that's the first thing, oh, it's a Jesus story, I'm not going to read it. And I do not do that. My fiction is much different. And even my non-Christian stories are different, you know what I mean? So I think they're going to get a good story, and I love to connect with people, and that's how I do it, through connecting through books. So I think that's why everyone should pick up a copy.
Okay, great. KT, same question. Why should anybody buy your book and your forthcoming books?
You know, it's going to be an adventure. You're going to absolutely enjoy it. I can definitely tell you that. If you begin reading the book, I promise it will suck you in, because that's the kind of books I like to write, the kind of books that I myself would enjoy. And so the kind of stories that grabbed you from the first pages and you're unable to put it down. You just want to get to the next page and find out what happens. And so I know this book will do that for you. If you're the type of person who enjoys that kind of story, you will definitely enjoy this book and the upcoming books that will come forward. So,
rather.
I can't remember who said it, but it might have been Maya Angelou. But lots of people have been created with this. You know, if there's a book you want to read and nobody's written it, write it. You know, and it sounds
right.
Like both of you have done that, is you've written the books you want to read.
It's so cool to see. Casey and I are just tweeting back and forth, and we're like, wow, there is someone who is just like me. When did this happen? <You know? laughs> It's so cool. This was not planned.
This was not planned. I just plugged you people in because it was based on when you contacted me. I just said, oh, okay,
yeah,
we'll put Parker here, we'll put KT here, and I had no idea that you guys were so alike. I had no idea.
No, it is. It's funny. I've been saying, you know, we were separated at birth. You know, we're writing sisters. We're twins. Twins are you.
Obviously.
Well, now you guys are going to have to exchange emails, and of course you should have each other's emails. I've been emailing you guys 45 times, so you should start talking. Parker, what motivates and inspires you?
I am inspired by a lot of things, but I think what inspires me is that what's the next story? What's the next story to tell? That my imagination is only as limited as I make it. I used to, when I was a kid, because I was into Star Trek, like I said, I'm a huge Trekkie fan. I have a lot of opinions about Discovery right now, but I used to say, I will not tell you because we do not have time, but
I
could
talk about
go?
That for a while.
I said, how far can you go to the farthest star? And how far is that star? I have no idea, but that's where I'm going, you know? And that's what inspires me, that I have 1,000 ideas and upon 1,000 ideas, you know? And I'm sure every writer has so many of them, that your imagination is what's going to stop you from writing. And, you know, that'll stop you from telling stories. And I always say, you know, where do excuses go to die? For those out there who want to write, where do they go to die? You know, and right. So if you want to write, don't let your imagination is the only thing that's stopping you. And if your imagination is vast, so will your stories be.
Yeah. I love it when people find out I'm a writer and they go, oh, I want to be a writer. And I say, really, what have you written? Nothing. I'm like, yeah, you don't want to be a writer. I don't say that to them. I just go, yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah, you don't want to be a writer. If you haven't written anything, you don't really want to be a writer. KT, what motivates and inspires you?
Let's see. What inspires me, you know, a lot of times it's just trying to live my best life and, you know, striving for what I want. Usually my imagination will take me for a ride. I can be walking down the street And then all of a sudden, an idea will pop into my head, like, what would be so cool right now if, let's say, for instance, the train track somehow derailed off of the top floor and just came down crashing into the street? What would you do? I ask myself a lot of what would I do kind of questions. And, you know, it's just living life. And then that comes about and that kind of takes me onto another, you know, down the rabbit hole again. And I have, just like Parker said, I have so many ideas, so many kinds of books that I've just been waiting to be delved into. And what motivates me is just knowing that it has to be written. You know, I do believe that it is my place in this world to be a storyteller. And I know that is my God-given ability to be able to give a great story, a great performance. And so knowing that is my purpose actually motivates me even more. Even when, you know, life does get in the way in terms of work, family, husbands, puppies, whatever. I'm speaking particularly about Swedish individuals who are probably listening to me right now. But I'm just saying, you know, it does push you to understand that you have a role to play. Everyone has a role to play in the world, and so you really should fulfill that one.
Yeah. Husbands are they're high maintenance. I can agree with that.
Oh, my God. Tell me about it.
Oh, my gosh.
Being one myself, I'm totally aware of how high maintenance we are.
There's hope for you, Evan. There's hope for you.
Yeah. The first step is admitting you have a problem. And then, yeah. I've had this good time for a while. Parker, we're almost to the end of the show. And I forgot what I was going to ask you. We're almost to the end of the show. Is there anything I forgot to ask you about? Anything you want to make sure we say? Anything you got to get out before we end the show?
No, just thank you so much. If people want to follow me, my information is on the show description for today's show. And if you always want to connect with me, you certainly can. Thank you so much for having me, Evan. This has been a blast. And to meet my third twin, because I'm a twin anyway, and to meet my other twin, the triplet that I never knew I had, has been absolutely positively phenomenal. And so we're definitely, me and KT are definitely going to connect off air and see if we can hook up together there.
Absolutely. KT, yeah, same question. Anything you got to get out before the end of the show?
Thank you again, Evan, for having me on the show, because it has been an absolutely amazing experience. Parker, can't wait to talk to you offline, girl. We're going to be chatting away a storm on Twitter. If anyone ever wants to reach out, you know, one of the things that I always tell people, if you need a cheerleader on your side, I do have that as another side gig on top of the other side gigs that I have. So if you ever need someone to kind of help push you or help motivate you, I will push you. I will motivate you to do what you need to do. If you believe that writing is what you want to do, but you need someone to kind of help you through that, please feel free to contact me. And also, too, if you have any submissions that you wish to put out to our company or learn more about Sugarcane Publishing, you can do that at sugarcanebooks.com.
Great, great. You know, having a cheerleader or somebody you're responsible to, that's not the right word. I have a friend. I text her every day my word count, and then she says, yay, good job.
Okay.
It motivates me to actually get something done because, I got to text her my word count. If I don't text her my word count, she won't say good job, and then I'll be sad. So, it's amazing to have someone you have to be responsible to, and I'm forgetting the word. It's one of those business type words.
Accountability partner.
Accountability, that's the word I was looking for.
Yeah.
Partner. Yeah. great. I'd like to thank my guests, Parker J. Cole and KT Conti. I haven't had this much fun for a while. More information about both these writers is on my blog at blog.s7townsend.com. There's links to their websites, links to their books, links to their social media. So go check that out at s7townsend or blog.s7townsend.com. And tune in next week at the same time when our guests will be writers Katrina Taylor and Jack Hillman. Looking forward to that. Thank you, Parker. It was great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Evan. It was great to be here.
Great. And thank you, KT. It was great to have you on the show as well.
Thank you so much, Evan. Really do appreciate it.
Yep. And thanks to all our listeners. And everybody have a great weekend. And go Dogs.
This has been the Speculative Fiction Cantina on Right Stream Radio.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
It's a common expression, don't look a gift horse in the mouth. However, what if the horse's mouth is filled with useful insurance tools? This is the exact case with the GEICO app. Yes, the app is free and therefore a gift horse. However, look inside the app and behold, emergency roadside assistance, digital ID cards, bill pay. Get the GEICO app. Look it in the mouth. Get amazing services. Thank you.
My new Jack in the Box ribeye burger is made with 100% premium ribeye beef, grilled onions, a red wine glaze, and creamy Havarti cheese. It's fast food's first ribeye burger, so I'm inviting the whole industry to come try it. That's why I set up this giant 5-mile-long dining table. Oh, hang on. Hello?
Hey, Jack. We're at the far end of the table. Can you pass the napkins?
Sure. I'll pass them down. Should be there in a couple of hours. Come try my new Havarti and grilled onion and all-American ribeye burgers. Only at Jack in the Box. At participating restaurants.